Blog Talk Radio.
Life, Growth, and Wellness.
Truthful Tuesdays right here on Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. I'm Sandy Rogers, and I get to be your hostess for this evening. And, you know, I get so excited every Tuesday to be able to present this show to you and the fabulous, outstanding, wonderful guests that agree to come and share their expertise with you. So thank you for being a part of Life, Love, and Wellness. I'm so excited you chose to join in with us today. So there's a couple of things that we do before we get the party started. The first thing that we do in this, and hopefully on a daily basis, is we give thanks to our ancestors, to all the ancestors, for being with us always, and especially on Tuesdays, because sometimes we bring up issues that are not ordinarily talked about in an open setting. They may be whispered about in corners of the room, but not in an open environment. And so we open up the platform so that it becomes a part of our language and understanding. So we know that it's only because of the strength of the ancestors that we're able to do that. So we know that they got us, they got our backs, fronts, tops, and bottoms as we move forward. So ancestors, we love you. We love you now, and we love you forever. Ashe, ashe. So I want to do one other thing. We anchor ourselves in positive energy so that we get to shake off the day, you know, whatever that may be. It could be all positive. It could be a mixture of some things, but, you know, just so that we're all on the same energetic plane. So I read from my daily inspirational messages, and you can find them at revsandy.wordpress.com. But this message that I want to read today is called Ask No Questions. And you'll understand in a moment why I've chose this particular one. So it says, while attending an awesome fundraising concert at 12 Stone Farm, I was blessed with not only great music and fellowship, but I witnessed something that was truly amazing to me. There was a storm approaching. The people there felt the winds blowing stronger and the sky changing colors, but we just kept doing what we were doing. Then suddenly, in unison, all the horses galloped to safety under some trees. They did not ask each other, well, what do you think? Is it going to rain? Or what did the weather person predict for today? Instead, they instinctively knew it was going to be a downpour of rain, and immediately they sought shelter. The rains came down hard, soaking the ones who were out in the fields with the horses or talking with one another outside of the shelter that was provided. Instinctively, the horses knew, and they followed their instinct. Several of the participants that were paying attention commented on the movement of the horses. We laughed and said, horses are smarter than people. It was truly a sight to see. Together, they all dashed to safety with no questions asked. Just for today, do not hesitate by stopping to ask questions. Do not ask yourself or someone else, do you think I should do this or any other question? When you feel deep inside of you that you are being divinely led, just go or do what you're being led to. Just do it. The horses were a wonderful reminder to me that we all have this incredible power within us. However, many of us refuse to pay attention or heed to the prompting by Holy Spirit, and we miss our opportunity of a blessing. Today, follow that inner gut feeling and be led to miraculous blessings. Ask no questions. And again, that's been a few years ago that happened, but I find it so appropriate for today. And like I said, as we go on, you'll understand the reason behind that. So it's all about life, it's all about love, and it's all about wellness. So our outstanding, remarkable guest for today is Red Smith, and I am going to introduce her a little bit more before I bring her on, and I'm smiling on the inside, and it's going to all come together in a minute. Trust me. Just trust me. So, audience, you know you're invited to join in our discussion. Our comments are welcomed, and our intention is to hear every voice that wants to be heard. So our call-in number here is 516-531-9819. And to join the conversation, you will simply press 1 on your device to let us know you want to speak live on air with us. Now, our microphones are extremely sensitive, so ensure the highest quality on our playbacks. We ask that you mute your phone if you're not speaking once your line has been open. The mics are extremely sensitive, and so if you would just do that, that's all we ask. And we do want your input and your active participation. We thrive on that. So you're listening to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show, and I just can't wait to bring this guest on and kind of tell you guys what I've been laughing at under my breath here, just thinking about the individual that I'm about to bring on. But we're going to take a quick music break, and then we'll be right back. All righty. See you in a few.
Let her all restore it.
welcome back, everyone, to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. And so that music that you just heard was a collaboration between me and my nephew, Anthony A.K. King, with the words and the actual recording production of that. So it's called The Power of the Rose. Ah, man. So once again, our number here is 516-531-9819, and you would press 1 if you would like to speak live on air with us. So it's all about life, it's all about love, and it's all about wellness. So our show tonight is called Our Mental Health is Vital, and our guest is Red Smith. And so what I've been smiling about is that I've been called Red the most of my life by my family members, and so it's just really interesting to be calling somebody else Red for a change. However, the second part of that is for my family members who saying, I don't know no Red Smith. Who is Red Smith, right? So Red's maiden name is Armstead. A-R-M-S-T-E-A-D, and so is mine. So I made a commitment to myself many years ago. Anybody with the name of Armstead is a cousin, is a family member of mine, and so that's just how I rolled through the universe. And so earlier today when Red and I were talking, she was like, so remind me now, how are we related? And so, you know, we're going to get that. And I'm sure, you know, like my own family members will be like, who? We never heard of this person before. So family, don't worry about it, right? But I call her my cousin, and she's also a certified peer specialist, writer, and a mental health advocate. Her passion is in helping those who are either in recovery or are ready for recovery. So tonight we're going to do like that inspirational message said in the beginning. We're going to ask no questions. We're just going to let this thing ride. So getting back to her write-up, it said that tonight we're going to discuss the importance of early intervention in mental health, changing the stigma of mental health, especially in the Black communities, and also the importance of getting help for childhood traumas and recognizing mental health issues. There's a lot at stake for our overall health and the well-being, and it's not just the virus, so get that right. We're not just talking about the virus. Red has firsthand experience being a certified peer specialist who offers support to those in need. So we've got to consider mental health as we're talking about our overall wellness. It's a crucial component in our health, right? So, you know, with everything that's going on in the universe right now, you know, we have a lot of different subjects to pull from, but we're going to just let it flow like it flow. And I'm so pleased and so proud to be able to introduce to you, for those of you that do not know her, my cousin, Red Smith. Red, are you with us?
Yes. Hi.
Hey.
Can you hear me okay?
Thank you for being with us tonight.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yes, ma'am. I mean, you have such a powerful message. And I know, you know, like we have probably talked about one direction that we could go in, you know, how, like how are we coping with all of the issues that we're dealing with. But we also talked about the childhood traumas, right? And those
yes.
things that are very important but are seldom discussed for whatever the reasons are. You know, we've got some family cultural behaviors that don't necessarily serve our good, but we follow them nonetheless. So with that being said, my dear, would you like to introduce yourself to the public?
Yes. Like she said, my name is, my friends call me Red in the mental health community. My real name is Wanda. I want to kind of start a little bit with what happened to me in the past so we can kind of lead up to where we are today. That's okay?
Sure, that's fine.
When I was about 5 years old, my family and I, we lived in D.C., and there was a lot of domestic violence. My father was very, very violent. He was very abusive, and we needed to get away from him. And so we finally found a way. I think the way that we figured out how to get away from him was to have my uncle to come over, take him fishing, and pretend that he was taking him fishing. And while he was away, we were at home, or at least my family was packing and getting us out of there. We didn't even know, I guess, as far as the kids were concerned, where we were going. All we knew is that we were leaving, and we were just confused. We finally migrated to North Carolina, a small town in eastern North Carolina, where a few years later he eventually found us. He found out where we were living, and he came to North Carolina. He's never been there before. He came to North Carolina, found out where we were. He ended up moving back in the house temporarily, but the threats and the abuse didn't stop. He continued to beat my mom and become abusive to the point where eventually she ended up shooting him in the head 4 times. Mm. He had threatened to kill us and kill himself and the family, and she believed him. And to protect us, I mean, she just had enough. Wow. And so she shot him in the head 4 times. He did not die.
Wow.
He died later on of cancer in Washington Hospital in D.C. Growing up, at seven, you know, when he found us and she shot him, although I was very young, and I was the youngest of 5, I was severely impacted by that. Later on, around about 11, I was molested by my stepdad. By the time I turned 14, I was drinking and smoking weed, dating men. I was definitely not a virgin at that point. I really can't even tell you when I lost my virginity, to be honest. By the time I was 16, I was clubbing and dating a 26-year-old man who also began to beat me. So I began to repeat the pattern of abuse with the men that I chose. Here I am, 16 years old, in high school, dating a 26-year-old man. He became very abusive. Eventually I got away from him, but then when I was 17, I met a 21-year-old Marine. He was also abusive, but I ended up marrying him when I was I met him actually when I was 16, and a year later I married him. Talked my mother into signing the paperwork to basically sign me over, emancipating me so that I can marry this grown man. I think I was looking for something in relationships, and I just never found it. I went through horrific abuse during my pregnancy. He continued to beat me during that time as well. When he got out of the Marine Corps, we moved back to his hometown, and he continued to beat me there. When I returned to North Carolina, he continued to beat me as well. But at any rate, I was able to get out of that marriage and try it. I said, well, you know, let me try it again. So at 22, I married another Marine. I guess you can kind of tell I had a thing for servicemen. Where I lived, if, you know, most of the guys lived, you know, worked in plants, or they were drug dealers, or, you know, you dated Marines, military men. It was, you know, you had Fort Bragg, you had, you know, Camp Lejeune, and all the military bases nearby. But by the time I was 30, I was divorced for the second time and severely broken. I spent my life just looking for something that I just never found. And as I was continuing to, by this time I had 2 children, one by the first husband, one by the second, and now I'm a single mom. And now I'm trying to raise 2 children alone. And it was one of the hardest things I could possibly do. I found out later on when I was stationed in Quantico, we were in stationed in Virginia, that I was diagnosed with bipolar I think it was just depression, maybe anxiety at the time. And later on, probably about a few years ago, the PTSD diagnosis was added because of the actually multiple PTSDs because of the things that I've been through. Now, the reason why I went through that to kind of give you a timeline without going into detail about each incident, just to show you a pattern, the pattern that I spent all of my life from the age of probably 7 all the way until now, I'm 49 years old, and I'm still in recovery. I'm still going to, this is a lifetime thing. This is not something that I'm going to arrive at. This is something I have to continue to work at each day. When I was 26 and I was in Virginia, I tried to commit suicide. And that marriage, I was completely broken. I knew that it was pretty much over. I gave up and I didn't want to live again. I had some Motrin 800, and I took probably about 8 or 10 of them. I can't remember how many. And I went into our extra bedroom, and I just kind of laid there. And I convinced myself that my children and everybody would be better off without me. My husband at the time found me and took me to the hospital, where I had the most horrific experience of my life, having my stomach pumped. I have never been through anything like that. I don't mean to get graphic, but this is real. You know, people, you know, when you think about wanting to die, you know, and you're really serious about it, when you survive, you don't really think about how you're going to deal with the aftermath. And just having my stomach pump and having to have, you know, a tube poured all the way down my throat, all the way from my throat all the way to my stomach, and they poured charcoal down that tube. And I'm gagging and everything at the same time. I can't breathe. It was just horrific. The doctors and the nurses, I believe, they were taught not to be nice or speak to me. The only person that was nice to me was the guy that was changing my bedpans. And it was just so horrific, and I felt so alone. I wouldn't let my ex-husband in the room with me because I felt like, you know, that he was triggering me every time I saw his face. And so I was just totally alone. I spent time in a mental hospital in Virginia during that time, and it was really difficult for me to leave my family, but I knew I needed the treatment. I kind of, you know, over the years just kind of lost that and just kind of just got caught up in life, and my mental health sat on the back burner. And I continued to use, you know, I had coping skills, but they weren't good coping skills. Okay. And so I continued to just take myself down the wrong path and continue to make it just add on, and never got the help that I really, really needed. You were going to say something?
Well, thankfully. No. I was listening to your story. But go ahead if you've got more before I
no.
what I have to say.
Mm-mm,
and
you
wait.
Keep on No,
you know,
go ahead, because I was going to talk about the early intervention. Go ahead.
Okay, no. This will feed right into that. It's amazing, maybe not so much amazing, but it's interesting, and I know we're all blessed to have you to be able to recover from the things that you've gone through in your life so that you can come and help some of us, you know, with the issues that we've gone through and have not been able to give voice to, because it really takes a lot of courage and it takes a lot of bravery, I'm going to call it, to be as frank and honest as you've been. We're talking about the different abusive relationships that you've had in your life, starting, you know, as early as you can remember at 8, 7, you know, and you just had this long list, a chronological list of the escalation of the abuse. And so I applaud you, Red, for taking the time to take care of you and to be able to come and to share your story with us.
Definitely. That is, I am blessed to be able to be here to tell my story. One of the blessings that I had going to the CPS training was being able to. That's one of the requirements as a CPS is being willing to tell your story, and to be able to share your story and to be open and honest with others about it, and with hope that, you know, to give them hope and to inspire them. And so I'm getting more and more comfortable the more I talk about it. And about it, to be honest, like you mentioned about family cultures, I still have to be very careful and respectful of my family, because, you know, I'm going to tell my truth and speak from my experience. But unfortunately, it impacts them as well. I had spoken to a couple of my siblings in the past and, you know, asked for their blessings about certain things. There still are a lot of, and I want to break that. And that's the reason why I'm kind of talking today, because I really want to break that, because there's a lot of secrets and there's a lot of childhood trauma that's going on, which is the reason why a lot of us as adults are still having issues. You know, we're kind of like, I read this thing on Instagram, it's, you know, it was speaking on regards to basically kind of like grown people walking around in children's bodies, you know, with children walking around in grown people's bodies. It's funny because when I speak to my therapist a lot, we're really getting into getting to talking to that little girl. And I've identified, and this is not a different separate personality. And this has been discussed with my clinicians, but I've identified a 14-year-old girl and her needs. Because because what that allows us to do is to kind of speak to her. You know, because she's still there, and she's still broken, and she's still lost in so many ways. So there's a lot of behaviors and things that I may still be connected to because of the past, and my therapist is, you know, we're able to identify those things. And so those are one of the ways that I'm coping, is in the kind of leading into the coping tips and coping skills. One of the things I am doing is talk therapy. It is okay to see a therapist. I'm going to say it again. It is okay to see a therapist. It's okay to talk to someone about what's going on. It is okay to let someone know how you feel. It is not okay for family or anyone else to make you keep their secrets. And self-care is very important. And a couple of things that I do to cope, one of the number one things on the list is the talk therapy. And I have been blessed to have this has not always been the case, but lately, over the last few months, I have been blessed to have a really good therapist and a psychologist who really are trying to be patient-centered and really work with me. I'm not an easy case, because I hold, as people hold me accountable, I hold them accountable. So I'm not easy, but I've got some sisters that aren't afraid of that and are willing to help me. I also, with pet therapy, I have an emotional support animal, a legal emotional support animal. Got a letter from my doctor because of my PTSD and my anxiety. I'm able to have a dog here. She's almost 60 pounds. They cannot weight restrict. They can't breed restrict. She looks like a pit bull. It doesn't matter what she looks like, and she's there for me. She keeps me going. She keeps me from isolating because I have to take care of her, and she keeps me good. You know, keeps good company. She forces me to exercise. That's one of the things that I've been doing a lot more is walking. I also swim. So those are some of my coping skills. And getting on the right meds. Now, I have never been a really big cheerleader of medication. But I will say right now I need some. As a matter of fact, it is totally okay to take medication if that's what you need. I contacted my therapist and my clinician and let them know I might need something more. With this coronavirus and everything that's going on, my coping skills are getting a little exhausted. And she explained to me, she said, you know what, it's totally okay, because with everything that's going on right now, you are not alone. There are a lot of people that are really, really struggling through the coping skills that they've learned, and so they may have to add a couple of things just to kind of get us through. This is a really tough time, and the pandemic has had a huge impact on the mental health community. But another thing that I also utilize is peer support. I do what I call an accountability team. I have a few friends that, you know, who can call me, you know, and check on me and see how I'm doing, and know when I'm going down that rabbit hole that they can get, you know, reach out to me. And when I need that self-care time, they give me that time as well, and I appreciate that about them. I also I created my own wellness plan. So basically my pet therapy, my exercise, you know, taking the right meds, having an accountability team, talk therapy, and just having that support team is really important. One of the things that I've been doing also, and to give back, since I'm not working in the actual capacity of a certified peer specialist as far as a job is concerned, but I worked with volunteered with NAMI, National Alliance for Mental Illness, and I was a co-facilitator for the peer support group. We had a weekly support group that we did every week live, and then when the corona hit, of course, we took it on Zoom. I've taken a break from that. I also helped co-facilitate for the NAMI Georgia, and that was really interesting because I was meeting people that just jumped on the Zoom call that I've never met in my life. So that was really a challenge, but it was actually fun and interesting at the same time. But it also gave me an opportunity to really listen to my peers and find out and keep my ear on the ground to find out what's really going on, what are their needs, and, you know, how are people really feeling? You know, and I just want to be an advocate for change. I'm a huge cheerleader for the peer support movement, and I want to help educate you all and anyone who wants to have a better understanding of what we're really going through. I encourage you, if you have someone in your family who is dealing with, whether it be an addiction, they're recovering from that, or mental health recovery, to be supportive and to just listen. Don't be judgmental. You know, don't stigmatize them and label them and tease them, you know, because those kind of things are very, very hurtful. And so I want to really show people how it affects me and what they can do, you know, to make a difference.
Okay. Whew, that was a lot, Red, but I thank you. And so one of the very important points that you brought up was the early intervention and its impact on mental health. And so what I saw as you were saying that, or how I channeled that, was that when there are unresolved issues from our childhood and then we're caught, so to speak, in this quarantine pandemic type of situation, that those can come back up, like at the lickety split second, and can take us, like you say, back down the rabbit hole of having that same experience as we did. Yours, I think, started at age 7, and where you remember, you know, and so that it. And we don't remember, or we don't know, or we don't give our mental health enough priority on our wellness scale to say, well, you know, I'm feeling some kind of way about something today. I wonder what it is, versus just, you know, going full speed ahead and saying, I'll get back to that later, you know. And so we go through, but that's not good if we're ignoring you know, our actual something that needs attention within our overall health, and mental health, of course, is an integral part of that.
Well, sometimes it's not also about holding it about that. About, in my case, I didn't mention. I never told anybody about being molested by my stepfather. And I asked my therapist a long time ago, I was like, what did my brain do with that information? I was so afraid of telling that it would hurt my mother that I didn't tell anyone until I became an adult, and that's when I found out that I wasn't the only one. So but when you really think about what the brain does and how when you're talking about a young brain, I probably may have been around 11, how my brain was developing, and what impact that had on my brain. A lot of people say, and I'm no doctor, but a lot of people say that this can be the cause of people manifesting a lot of their mental diagnoses and disorders. So when you look at all of the diagnoses that I've been given, bipolar to manic, which is manic depression back in the day, anxiety disorder, and the PTSD, when you think about that, that is a hell of a combination. So imagine mm-hmm. each day I have to make a decision every day to live, because there were times when you mentioned the rabbit hole and when you get triggered, and this is a time where I have been triggered a lot recently. And when you go down that rabbit hole, when you think about what it means to me, that rabbit hole means death. Because when I go down that rabbit hole, if I can't get out or if someone can't pull me out, I'm there to die. And while I'm there, I'm thinking about death. There was a time when I was isolating for months, and every day I thought about dying. Every day I had to make a decision not to kill myself. Wow. And I started hurting myself. I started cutting. And that kind of gave me the relief, instead of having to take it to the next level. And so right. I became a cutter, and I started mm-hmm. cutting. And when I would cut, it would just give me this almost like a release valve. I haven't done that in a long time. I don't do that anymore, but I just, that was just, and I had to hide it. And silly me, I use shea butter all the time. And so, of course, I would cut myself and then put a bunch of shea butter on it to make it heal. So you can't even really feel my arms anymore, because I would, I would cover it up and try to hide it from people.
Became a cutter?
Oh, I was an adult.
Okay.
That might have been within the last 10 years.
Ooh.
As an adult. Trying to deal with all the pressure, because once again, I never stopped to properly take care of my mental health. I just kept going. I started, I was doing medical billing and coding. I was making pretty decent money, but I was a single mom, but I was still, really working double overtime. And so my mental health was definitely not my prime priority. I was trying to make money. And that was, and that was my priority. But trauma is a threat that overwhelms a person's coping resources. And that's exactly what it did. And it made me where I couldn't trust anyone. I never feel safe. I was always angry as a teenager. I just remember as a teenager being very angry. I had a lot of self-hate. I always, have this feeling of emotional abandonment. People stand me up, I write you off. Back in the day, I was very, once I saw that as a pattern, you did it once or twice, that was it. Because I saw that as eventually you're going to abandon me, or you're going to, mistreat me the way everybody else does. I became very hypersensitive, hypervigilant, very cynical. I have a very good sense of humor, but I became very cynical as well. So life was just doom and gloom for me for a long time. It's just when I'm becoming in recovery, where basically I'm changing my mindset, using healthier coping skills, and trying to just, live in love who I am, and
yes,
start
yes.
to accept me for who I am. It's self-love. And it's not until that happens, it takes time, but it has to manifest. One of the things that I did do, I took a class, a certification on mental health first aid, and I took a certification on QPR, which is question, persuade, and provide resources. And those are kind of like suicide prevention type things. The mental health first aid, I took the one for youth. And what that certification is kind of like first aid for mental health. And what it allows you to do is to be able to ask the right questions and to be able to relate to the youth a lot better. And do you know, when I took that certification, I was the only one in that class with a diagnosis. Everybody else in that class, because it was, were school teachers, some nonprofit sectors, people from the mental health sector, and they're sitting there asking questions about, well, how do people act when they got bipolar? And I'm sitting there in the class,
oh,
like,
wow.
Are these people are these people serious? You know, I'm like, okay, I want to raise my hand. I'll tell you all about it, you know. But I'm sitting in a class of people who had no idea of, and so by the time we took our lunch break, I was so triggered that I had to pull the facilitator aside and vent, because she was a therapist, by the way, and I had to pull her aside and vent a little bit, you know, not in a negative way, but I was actually really a little shaken, because I sat there and watched. Had I had this resource, I was really upset, because I'm looking at all the things that they're doing and able to do under the mental health first aid for and to help the youth. And all I could think about is I'm so glad they have that now, but it made me cry inside, because I said, my God, if they had this when I was going through it, how my life could have been different today. My God, if they had this in the school system. My God, if they had the CTI, the CIT training for the police officers back then, you know, that they have now. All just about all most of Henry County police officers have this certification on crisis intervention training with mental health, and that was provided by NAMI, who I volunteer with. And, you know, back then, you know, had those resources been available, and I'm wondering if I could have had a better chance. But I can't, you know, I can't harp on that. But it just, you know, I was very emotional because of that, because I said, my God, if someone was with mental health first aid certification came to me and said, hey, and sat down beside me and listened with empathy and act like they cared and persuaded me to get help and provided me with resources, that's what we need. And so I encourage anyone who wants to make a difference, go online right now. They're offering it online, the Mental Health First Aid and QPR. Just go on their websites. Just type in Mental Health First Aid and Google or QPR, and you will find it. Get your certification so that you can learn how to help one another. Learn how to, and QPR, they teach you when someone is suicidal, you don't ask them, you don't want to kill yourself, do you? That's not
right,
how you
right,
ask
right.
a person. If they want to die. But that's how everybody's always asked me.
Mm.
You don't want to kill yourself, do you? So now you're leading. It's kind of like leading the, you know, you're leading me, you know, to tell me, basically say, if I say yes, then I'm going to, so now I'm going to tell you what you want to hear. And then tomorrow you wonder why I'm dead. So we have to start asking the right questions and saying the right things and stop stigmatizing each other and stigmatizing, especially, I'm talking especially to family members. Because it starts there. People in the streets are only going to do what the family sometimes allow. Because I know one thing, I will say that when I was growing up, there weren't too many people that would tease me about certain things. I grew up, not to go off base, but I grew up with a condition called brachiometatarsia. It is a condition, I wasn't born with it, but it your fourth digit toe stops growing. And so as a child, I'm sure you can imagine the ridicule and the teasing and stuff that people looking at me like I'm some kind of freak or looking at me like I'm just given because it's a deformity, but it stopped growing. I wasn't born that way, and I've met many people with it. But one thing I can say is that, you know, back when I was growing up, I had a brother that's close to me, and he didn't let anybody too many and sisters, and they didn't let people tease me about that. But but just imagine, that was one thing. I was on the swim team and everything, and my brother would not allow that. He wouldn't let anybody tease me about my toes. But just imagine growing up with all these issues and then having that, and I'm the only one out of five children that has this. So, you know, I went through that as a child. But with the COPE, you know, the things that I do that has worked for me. There is a respite center, something that people don't know about that you can do, that you can go to. There are five in the state of Georgia, but unfortunately the one that's closest to me in McDonough, Georgia, is getting ready to close, and that's the one that I utilize. You can there's one in Decatur, Georgia. There's one in Decatur, Georgia. It's the respite center. You can stay there, and I think that they are doing overnight stays still, as well as the daily activities. You can stay there for 7 consecutive days every 30 days, and you have your own bedroom. I had my own bathroom. You cook your own food and take care of yourself. And what it allows you to do, it kept me from it keeps us from overusing the crisis centers. In the hospital,
okay.
The ER.
Okay.
Because when
so do you have to have a diagnosis in order to go there?
Well, you do need to identify with I think either addiction or mental health concerns, or whatever. But there's not. It's run by peers. It's run by certified peer specialists like me. And it's funded by the BHDD, by the state of Georgia, but it's run by peers, and so that's the beauty of it. There are a lot of things that I think that ways that they can improve and make it better. But for the most part, myself as well as some of my friends have benefited tremendously from being able to go there instead of feeling like I have to go in the hospital. If I get tired of people, like, you know what, I'm going to rest it. And I'll go and stay there for 7 days. They had a computer room. They have, TV room. And like I said, they take you grocery shopping. I think you have a $70 amount. You just go and they take you and you just buy. They take your Kroger and you just pick out what you want. And you cook and whatever you want to eat. And then they have things that they have in the house as well. So a lot of people don't know about that resource. Because right now with COVID, I do think that they're still operating with the overnight stay and also the wellness activities though are online. They've moved those on the daily wellness activities. But I encourage, and then they also have a warm line that you can call. So, people, not when you're in crisis and you need to go to the hospital, be hospitalized. You call the warm line when you just want to talk to somebody and you talk to a certified peer specialist who can just relate to you and listen to you. So these are resources that a lot of people are not aware of that I want to make sure that I get the word out about.
Sure, sure. So, I heard earlier today, and I didn't realize the impact that it would have on our conversation, but that the suicide prevention hotline, their call rate is up like 600 or 6,000% from what it was, prior to the pandemic. And I could see that because, like I said, a lot of people are not even taking into consideration what this isolation from other humans, not being able to touch, because humans need that, the touch. They've done that research time and time again with the babies. You put two babies, newborns, and you don't touch one and you touch the other. Well, the growth development is so much quicker in the one that gets the touch versus the one that doesn't. And so all of this is contributing to, what we're actually feeling. And just like with me a couple of days ago, I really had to take a look at things because I'm still or have still been going out and to the garden and, doing some energy work. And, so I'm therefore considered an essential worker. And so I'm not, as confined to being inside the house. But what occurred to me, because I was feeling some kind of way, borderline depression, was that I wasn't confined, but I had nowhere to go when I left out. If I didn't go to the garden and if I didn't go and do counseling with somebody, or something like that, everything else is closed up. And so that has an impact on how you feel as well. I'm just so, the thought, and you guys, we had not had this in-depth of a conversation with what Rev was going to talk about tonight. I knew it was going to be around mental health. And that subject just, it incorporates so much of our life that we really didn't have to, try and hone it in on any one particular subject. But, you also brought up when you laid out your life and the different things and the different ages that you were when these things were happening. I was heavily involved in the HIV and AIDS community for, 20-something years, and a large part of that was spent right here in Georgia. And I had gone to this church to do this health fair, and so I was speaking to a group of people regarding the HIV and the AIDS, the teenagers, you know, then the adults and things like that. But I went to support one of the other speakers who was talking on domestic violence. And I thought that I went to hear her and to support the things that she was doing. And I found myself just crying and crying. And I realized that I was a victim of domestic violence as well, but I had stuffed it so far down, like what you're talking about, had stuffed it and put it over to the side because I didn't want to say that to anybody. And, you know, one of the reasons why is I didn't want anybody to, you know, to think bad of my ex-husband, you know, and things like that. And it wasn't, I think it was more that I wasn't honoring what I was feeling more than that, but I was able to, you know, to put it off on something totally you know, unrelated to my honest feelings about, you know, this abuse that I had experienced. And so I know that it's real to wake up in your 40s and your 50s and realize that there was something very traumatic that happened that you've never dealt with.
And I try to.
So
try
how?
To, I think I. Oh, go ahead.
No, no, I'll go. No, you say what you're going to say, and then I'll come back and ask you my question.
No, you go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Okay,
I think I'm
so
gonna answer
how do we help our children? I know that there's a lot of children that have been impacted in not such a good way with this shutdown, close down, pandemic, quarantine, whatever you want to call it, because they're now at home with the person that's abusing them, taking advantage of them, mistreating them, not feeding them, or, you know, whatever. And so just taking it from that perspective, so how do we help the children that's in our neighborhoods, that are perhaps even in our own families, that may be going through? Do we sit down and we have conversations with them, you know, asking them about how their life is currently as of else, or...
Absolutely. I can tell you what I do. One of the things that I do, I'm known as Auntie Red in my neighborhood, and the kids, there's few girls, they're about 11, and one of the things that I do, I let them, first of all, play with my dog. They love my dog, and I've a few times brought them over here. We've had movie day. I've taken them and got permission from their parents to go on walks with me and my dog, and just spend time with them and listen. Because I noticed one time the 11-year-old kind of caught an attitude, and I was like, "Oh Lord, this is me! This is me." She had a little attitude about something, and I, you know, and instead of ridiculing her, I got her to the side and I talked to her and I listened to her. And in doing that, I was able to let her know, hey, you are important too, and I'm listening to you. And once I was able to do that, she was able to kind of, you know, kind of snap back out of that. And I'm not saying that she's neglected, but let's just say I see her a whole lot outside, her and her little sister. And so what I do, I don't judge their mother. As a matter of fact, I met their mother later on, and when I finally did meet her, I saw the other day, I said, I'm giving you my number. If you ever need me, please call me. That's what we do without judgment.
Right.
Stop
right.
judging these mamas and help them. And, you know, but we need to do so with boundaries, because there are some out there, you know, who would take advantage of that. You know, but if you see somebody, if you see something, do something. And don't be nosy and asking kids a bunch of questions. Because I taught my children a long time ago, if somebody mother asking you a bunch of questions, tell them you need to go ask my mother. Because, you know, so probing the children is not, I don't think, is a good idea. That's just me coming from a mother standpoint. But just being there and listening and showing them attention. Because a lot of these kids just don't get attention. So when she sees me, she could be at the pool, and my building is way over here. Hey, Miss Red, what? You know, she's yelling from across the way, you know. And, mm-hmm. and my thing is, if I feed these kids and I give them snacks sometimes too, healthy ones and not so healthy, but my thing has always been if I feed them, then they respect me. So when they do something wrong, they're going to be least likely to curse me out. And it's working so far.
Right. Right. And well, you know, when you give off good energy,
get on the box and curse you out when you're feeding them.
Huh? Yeah. Well, but you know, you got the right intention with the children. I think it's when the
right.
adults that give off the bad judgmental vibe
right.
Are the ones that get that type of response. I've never been cursed out by a child, and I've been working with children
mm-hmm.
for a long, long time. So you know, you give respect,
mm-hmm.
you get respect.
Right,
and,
right.
And so, you know,
I'm tough love, though.
I'm
very tough love, and I think you probably are, too. So kids know who they can kind of talk that way to, though.
Exactly. And we're gonna have to open up the lines. We do have one caller that's been
mm-hmm.
waiting for a while, but I wanted to make sure that we got your story in and we
mm-hmm.
can kind of feed from that. But I also
mm-hmm.
hear as a subtitle up under what everything that you were saying is that is generational issues that need to be resolved. And so when it comes down to, you know, like however many generations later and there's still domestic violence going in the same family bloodline, then something hasn't been healed. And so
mm-hmm.
how do we go about that would be one of the things I would like for you to address. But let's open up the line for this one caller. And audience, our call-in number is 516-531-9819. And you would just push 1 on your dial on your apparatus and let us know you want to speak live on air. And we're about down to the last 30 minutes of the show. So, caller, I apologize. 678-267. You want to give us your name and your comment or concern, please? Caller on 678-267. If you muted yourself, you got to unmute yourself.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'd like to get a shout out to my friend Red and your podcast this evening. I'd like to touch base on the domestic violence aspect. With me being married 33 years, divorced now for 7, I was knowing my significant other for 40 years. The first 15 years of the marriage, the domestic violence was mainly perpetrated by him. And the second 15 years of the 30-year marriage, I became the abuser.
Mm-hmm.
And with me having a background of my father beating on my mother, him being an alcoholic, my mother didn't drink. I became self-medicated with alcohol and drugs. And through the peer center, with knowing the coping skills, I'm celebrating 5.5 years sobriety. And
awesome.
I want to thank you and thank Red for sharing her story. And what I find to be help is the talk therapy, being transparent, you know, instead of hiding behind your guilt and your shame. I found as though the best therapy is to talk about it. And I want to thank you for coming on tonight, Red, and it's been a pleasure listening to the both of you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
I appreciate that.
That was so heartfelt. Thank you.
Yeah. I really appreciate it.
Yes, indeed, and thank you for letting me share. you ladies can continue. I really appreciate listening to you.
You brought up such an interesting point, you know, how that domestic violence was shared between you and your husband. I mean, oh, gee whiz. You know, for that type of dynamics to be active and for you to endorse the talk therapy, that's excellent. Well, thank you. So we've got one more caller here, Red. I'm going to bring them on and stay on, okay. Caller. So we've got 503-453. You want to tell us your contribution to the conversation, please?
Yes, this conversation was really right on time for me. I'm coming in incognito. I refuse to say who I am. Today is July 28th, 2020. My father's birthday, and I did a Facebook shout out to him. Happy birthday. I guess kind of out of guilt, because I have rarely talked about my father because he molested me as a child, and I've just never really talked about it that much. I've always felt like I was a really strong person, that I didn't need any therapy, that I didn't become promiscuous. You know, I just went through life hiding it, I guess. And so I was told that as him being an ancestor with the spiritual crime that he committed against me, that one of the blessings to become an ancestor, always be alive through having your name mentioned. And so even though I did the birthday shout out, which I haven't ever done before, it just didn't feel right. And so there's no accident, Red, that you come on this evening with your story. I also went through domestic violence in my 30-something years of marriage as well. And it's like, you know, when does a girl child just get tired of being pounced upon, either physically or violently or sexually or whatever, when you're doing life the way you're supposed to do it and you're perpetrated on? So I just want to know, where can a person go for talk therapy and get it out? I'm in my 70s, and I really forget about this, but then you have cracked the egg tonight. Well, actually, you didn't. Me doing the birthday shout-out to him did, because I really didn't mean it. Most times I forget it's his birthday on purpose. So in some way, you have been that healing balm within me on just the day that I needed it, because, as they say, I was just feeling a certain kind of way. And I wanted to go back on Facebook and delete it, I guess, because I really didn't mean happy birthday, you know. All my other relatives, I got my grandmother, oh, God, my cousin, within the last week, all of them have had birthdays, and it's so wonderful to, you know, do a heavenly birthday shout-out, you know, to my ancestors. And I thought I could do that same with him, but it just didn't feel genuine. And thank
absolutely
you
understand.
Yes. You know, and I so blamed myself for the abuse, because as a child I was very curious, and I found a box of Kotex in my mother's closet, and I remember her what it was, and she said, oh, those are special napkins. So when we had company over for dinner one time, and my job was to set the table. I went and got the special napkins and put them on the table and put the fork and the knives on them. And my parents were horrified. I didn't know why till years later. But I felt that it was my fault for putting those special napkins out, that maybe that was in his mind some kind of sign that I was ready for the next step or something.
Oh.
So,
oh,
you know,
no.
Yeah, you know how we blame ourselves. It must have been my fault for putting the special napkins on the table.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for allowing me to go incognito and hopefully not too many people know who I is. But anyway, I appreciate it.
Well, I thank you for having the bravery to share, and you blessed me with your testimony. Thank you.
Well, all right then. All right.
Now,
so,
where can she go for the talk therapy?
Yeah, where I go for the talk therapy?
Well, it depends on what state that you're in. There's a plethora. If you go on LinkedIn, you can find a plethora of therapists. A lot of them are doing telehealth right now. I talk with my therapist on the telephone right now. And
okay.
You can go to, I'm not going to identify your state, but each state has a community service board, and usually there's a mental health counseling center or a mental health clinic that's attached to that. The ones in Georgia, they're all different per county, but, you know, it's usually based on the sliding scale. I don't think you can have commercial insurance, but I think you can have Medicaid and Medicare, and no insurance, of course, by a sliding scale. So there is help. There are resources out there. Every state has a Department of, Development Disabilities type of thing. So I would just go online, and you will definitely can find some therapists who are on a sliding fee scale. If you want to give Sandy your information, I can find you one. I have over 500 connections on LinkedIn, and most of them are clinical people, and I've, you know, kind of been taking a look at what some of them are doing, and I can recommend you some in your state. So if you just give me your information, I can help you with some resources, okay?
Right. Wonderful. Thank you, Red. I will definitely get in touch with Miss Sandy, and she can, you know, I'll let her know who I am. I didn't
recognize
some words. I don't know how.
So, not to worry. Red, NAMI has a sliding scale. Are they nationwide or NAMI?
NAMI, no, that's just a support group. They don't provide that, but they do have a helpline that you can call, and they can give you, if you go on NAMIGeorgia.org or NAMI.org, they have a helpline, and with that helpline, they can provide you with any resources that you're looking for in your area. And as a matter of fact, I was told that Peer Scoop was listed on that under the help desk for NAMI Georgia. That was something that someone told me that they thought that my newsletter that we just started, Peer Scoop, was a great resource. So, but just go on NAMI.org and look on the help line, and you can go that way. So there's so many other ways that you can find resources. One thing that I've been trying to be very good about is being resourceful. Because in this day and age, you know, you have to be, because a lot of these programs are not advertised. A lot of these things that, you know, that I've been able to be blessed with has not been advertised anywhere. So I'm always willing to share information.
Well, because I know NAMI is really good, and I've worked with them years back, but they were always a high integrity type of organization. So. We got one more caller, so 503, just hang in there for us or with us.
Okay.
And
okay.
So our next caller is 404-936. I'm not asking for names tonight. I'm only asking that you share with us what you have to add to the conversation. 404-936. Okay.
Hello.
Yeah.
I was just going to chime in. Can you hear me okay?
We can, yes.
Yes. I would just like to give a huge shout out to my friend Red for coming on with her bravery to share her story with so many. And she didn't have to do that, but I'm very thankful that she did. I can relate to some of the things that she talked about, not necessarily dealing with me, but family members that have been in situations like she discussed. And it just gave me a different perspective of just listening how she had to endure a lot of different things as childhood trauma and how she dealt with it and how she's actually self-caring and getting the help that she needs for herself now to continue to make the adjustments that she needs to do in her life to be productive. And it makes me think about my mom when she was young and being abused. She became very dependent on alcohol, and some of the things that she shared, we didn't have a bond until the last 14 years of her life, and how she pretty much it was four of us, four siblings, and other family members raised us because she was not able to do it because of the addiction that she had and some of the childhood traumas that she experienced in her early childhood. She was not able to take care of us at that time. And later in life, with those last 14 years of her life, we actually built a bond. And my grandmother raised me, which was her mom, and she, we had the opportunity to just sit down and talk. And I asked her, you know, why did she, you know, give me away? Why did she treat me so bad and call me bees and all kind of negative comments that she did? And I mean, I received the mental abuse from her, not necessarily the physical, but both are bad. And she explained to me, and she got very emotional, and I did as well. She said that she was very envious of me, and she said the reason being because she seen so much of herself in me, and she never got the chance to become who she wanted to be in life because she was having children. She got married at an early age, and she just felt her life was it didn't mean anything, and she just was having children, and everybody was being productive except her, and she felt very bitter. It's not that she didn't love me. She just seen so much potential in me, and she know those things was in her, but she never had the opportunity to act on those things. So therefore, I look a lot like my mom. She's deceased now, and she was very bitter towards me, and because of those things that happened to her. So just listening to Red tonight, and I'm thankful that I prayed about it, and I did go to my mom, and we built a great relationship in the last 14 years of her life, and I did forgive her, and I learned to accept her for who she was. That was one of the biggest things that I had to do for me because I was very ashamed of her because of how her lifestyle was and how she was living, because I really wasn't accustomed to that. But once I did that, it took a weight off of me, because who am I to judge her, you know, of the lifestyle that she has, and just love her unconditionally, because I don't know, she really was trying, but she just had a lot of trauma. Those are the things that I did not understand. But as we built that relationship, it got much better and better. And just to hear Red's story tonight just really blessed me. And it just reassured me that I did the right thing of connecting with my mom the last 14 years of her life. And I thank you, Red, for coming on, sharing your information, And thank you, Miss Sandy, for allowing Red to come on. And thank you for having this radio station to help others. And that's pretty much all I have to say at this time. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Jerry, for blessing us with that.
Yes. Because, you know, I think a lot of women have that disconnect with their mom. And I think you put words to possible understanding for women, you know, with that jealousy and envy, and, you know, how women could have felt, you know, that they were just a baby making machine, and, you know, they had no self-worth. And then, you know, there comes their daughter, and, you know, she's making something out of her life. So thank you for that. I appreciated that. That was beautifully said.
That's a blessing.
Thank you.
And when you talk about your childhood, I can definitely relate to that. I missed I missed a whole section. I went from child to adult. I didn't have that middle. I mean, I was already clubbing at 14, so I was dating grown men. So I really didn't even have a adolescent, if that makes sense. So that's part of the problem. I feel I missed a whole section. And, you know, when my schoolmates were going to prom, I was going to the club. So I'm like, prom?
Wow.
That's for kids. You know,
wow.
So I was so ahead of my, you know, just so fast and so ahead of my time that I just could not. And I dropped out of school in 11th grade as well. So, you know, that was another problem that our children with mental illness are struggling with mental illness they're going to deal with is if we're going to start seeing high school dropout rates again. You know, right now, you know, I wanted to speak to the youth because right now it's to me it's much easier to prevent something than to be trying to fix a broken adult. You know, I'm not being funny when I say that, but, you know, let's prevent it from happening, you know, if we can, to keep, you know, like right now you said a lot of children are at home and have been exposed to Lord knows who, you know, and may not be being fed or taken care of properly, and there's no telling what these children are going through. And sometimes for some of these kids, the school is the safest, most stable place, stability that they actually have in their lives.
Exactly.
You know, so we're walking around thinking that our lives are great, but there's a lot of people that are hurting right now, and especially now since we don't have that outlet when, you know, we lost when I was doing the NAMI facilitating right before we went from being live to going on Zoom. We lost a member, you know, and we don't know what happened. You know, he died by suicide, and, you know, it broke us because we didn't know what happened. But, you know, that's why we have to stay connected. We have to do check-ins with people. You know, if they're not answering their phones, I know we have COVID, but put your mask on and go over there. You don't know what people, because right now it's so easy for people to isolate. Now, I'm going to tell you about one of my friends. I've been doing some self-care for the last few weeks, and she couldn't get a hold of me, and she came to my house.
Good.
You know, I have those friends that would knock on your door and go to your pool and look for you you know, put a card in your door and say, hey, you know, I know you've taken care of yourself, but are you still alive? And so we have to check on each other and make sure that we're okay. You know, I have friends that will send me an email and let me know, hey, I love you, and there's nothing you can do about it, and let me know that they're thinking about me while I'm taking care of myself. You know, so necessary you take that time out. So I don't want to take up anybody else's time. If anyone else wants to speak or have any other questions, we're here.
All right, we've got about 8 minutes left. Our call-in number is 516-531-9819. Just hit 1 on your device and it'll light up and let us know that you want to speak live on air with us. This has just been absolutely an amazing discussion. And it's flowed exactly the way that it was supposed to flow. From the voices that we've heard from our listeners. So, Red, you have been obedient. You've done exactly what you were supposed to do with how you brought your story. And so I just appreciate you so much. And we're going to have to meet, cuz, one of these days.
Yes. And you're in Georgia, so there's no excuse. You're probably about 40
minutes. I know, right?
I
just think that's
Atlanta,
so hilarious.
You're probably 40 minutes north. but one thing before, until someone else gets on, I do want to provide the website for the Georgia Mental Health Consumer Network. Is G as in George, M as in Mary, H as in Harry, C as in Cat, N as in Nancy.org. That is the site where you can, find all about the peer support. If you would like to become a certified peer support, I will warn you, it is not the easiest thing to get into. It took me 3 tries, and right now I think they may be starting back up to have the next training. My training was 2 weeks long, and it was very, very intense, but I'm glad that I went through it. But if you want to make a difference, get these certifications. You know, the mental health first aid, you don't have to have a diagnosis for that. QPR either, CPS you do, as far as diagnosis, as far as in recovery with mental health. There's different ones. You can get one for mental health, and they even have forensic peer support. It's something that people may not even be aware of. Forensic meaning they actually go into the jails, and then you may actually have a peer support person that may come out on the ACT team when you call that GCAL number, that crisis line number, and say, hey, I need some help, and they determine they need to come out. They will come out and have a team to come out and meet with you. If they do bring an officer with them, especially in my county, they're pretty much all trained through NAMI, through the crisis intervention team, and they will bring a cop with them. But as they explain, that cop is there to, and they really pretty much go at their direction. They're not necessarily there to, they're not there to arrest you. But I've had one come out to my house before. A cop was not there. They actually made the arrangements and for me to actually go into a mental health facility. So, there are a lot of different things that you can do to get help, but you got to reach out. Call the crisis lines and reach out to people if you can't talk to people in your own community. But one other resource it would behoove me not to mention, is one thing that I decided to do to get busy and to make a difference is to use my talents to do so, and so can all each of one of us. I'm a writer, so I started a newsletter called Peer Scoop News, peerscoop.news.com. On that, you would see the newsletters, and all of our contributors are peers in recovery, either from mental health or addictions. And they are the contributors. They contribute poems and stories and just all different types of things. So if you go onto our website, you'll see all the different newsletters. If you would like to become a contributor and write for our newsletter, please let us know by going on the website or emailing me at peerscoopnews@gmail.com. That's my shameless plug.
thank you so much. I was trying to keep up with you. Now, there was a couple of things that I needed clarification. So you said it's the mental health first aid class was one. And
yes.
Then you said
it's the mental
Q,
health first aid. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Then QPR.
QPR. Mm-hmm.
Say it
QPR,
again.
QPR, if you just Google
okay.
Q as in, as in Quincy, P as in Paul, and R as in Robert. And I think it's QPR.org. But if you Google that, that's probably going to be the first thing that comes up.
Okay, and then there was one more that you said, too, was it or not?
The mental health first aid and the certified peer specialist. With the certified peer specialist, that is on the Georgia Mental Health Consumer Networks page. That's where I gave you the GMHCN.org. And you will find a plethora of information on there, as well as daily wellness activities that they have that are available. They also have the warm line, but that is for Georgia residents only.
Okay. Okay. And then the forensic team,
mm-hmm.
Was that the name of that group of people?
That is a type. That's a designation of a certified peer specialist. If you want like right now, I'm just mental health only. There are some who deal with addictions, which I think is the CARES. And then there's some that deal with just youth and some that just deal with children. And then the people who deal with the forensic are the ones who actually go into the jails. And you have to have been to jail before to actually get that designation as a peer specialist.
You have to have been
in
jail before? Okay.
Well, you got to be able to relate to the people in there.
I think
before,
it's wonderful.
I don't think I can.
for DUI a long time ago, but I don't think I can relate to somebody that just did 2 years in jail, you know, because
right,
I never
right.
went into population.
I think it's like when you were talking about being in the room, and I'm sorry, you guys were all together doing a certain part of that mental health wellness, and you were the only one with the actual experience that had any knowledge about it. So it's the same type of
deal. That was the mental health first aid. But that's, I mean, but that's good, though, because they're learning, and they are now learning how to help anyone. But the QPR is QPRinstitute.com. That site for the QPR.
Okay. All right, QPR, you guys. So we are closing up for real, for real. But let me just kind of, and I thank you, close up with going back over some of the contact resources that Red has given us. And then, Red, I wanted to leave the last minute or so for you to close us out. So there are articles that you can read at www.peerscoopnews.com, PEERSCOOPNEWS.com. Resources if you want additional training, mental health first aid, QPR Institute. You can become a certified peer specialist through the GMHCN.org here in Georgia. The forensic team is a part of the certified peer specialist that to jail. There's a respite center in Decatur. If that's something that you feel you need to kind of get away from everybody. And then talk therapy is available through telehealth, and they have a sliding fee. And NAMI, N-A-M-I, is an excellent resource for mental health. And with that, I'm going to turn it back over to my newly discovered cousin, Ms. Red, and let her close us out.
Well, I just want to say thank you to everyone who came on tonight to join in, to listen. I hope that there's someone out there that if you have been through something and you haven't, you were like me and you didn't share, that reach out to someone and talk to someone now. You know, and for those of you who don't think you're in recovery and everything is great, support all those of us who aren't. And don't stigmatize us and don't label us. Love on us and show us empathy and understand that just as someone with a diagnosis of a heart disease or high blood, you know, or any other disease, you don't treat them that way, you know. So treat us with someone that you would treat with cancer. Give us that same dignity and that same empathy because we need it, especially now. And we will do the same for you because all of the things that we've learned and all the skills that we learned, and we were able to share those tools with one another and to help each other get through this, because without that, without each other, we're nothing. And I just want to leave us with that. Check on someone today, and if you are that person that's hiding that secret, speak up. Speak up to somebody now. Do not hold on to that. Don't be me getting ready to turn 50 in February still trying to figure stuff out. And I'm going to leave it on that.
Ooh, that is a perfect point to end. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. We love you, and we were so richly blessed by your sharing of your wisdom and your knowledge. And callers that joined us, thank you each for sharing of your very personal journey in life. And you guys, tune in again next week, 9 o'clock, for another powerful and insightful show. This is Sandy Rogers. I am signing off. And thank you guys for being with us tonight.
Thank you.